CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone Newsweek in the Hill. Gordon, the news from the People's Republic of China, non-transparent as it is that the ambitions for planning for the economy have been reduced from 5.5% growth to less than 3.5% growth, which is dramatic enough. We also hear of a cut in interest rates despite the worldwide inflation, despite what you'd have to say are broken economies around the world, cutting interest rates in order to encourage borrowing. However, this in classic terms is called a liquidity trap. The reason people are not borrowing is not because the rates are too high. It's because their debts overwhelm them and there's no profit coming in. In other words, the Chinese income has dropped with the purchases from overseas and other mistakes, chiefly described by Evergrande, the failure of a developer to deliver on promises, and that money's not now being paid. So I speak in general, first of all. These are dire facts if applied to an economy such as Germany or England or the United States. Are they all the same interpretation applied to China? Liquidity trap, mortgage strike, and the local governments with out of money and out of time. Good evening to you, Gordon.
Good evening, John. And the difference is that everybody expected China to do much better than it currently is. And today is a bellwether for that because the National Bureau of Statistics released its July numbers, and two of them just caught people by surprise. The industrial output grew 3.8%, but people were expecting about 5%. And July's number was below June's by a hair, but it was expectations of a recovery that did not occur. The other number that people focused on was retail sales. And I think this is actually the more important number, John. It rose 2.7%. People were expecting basically double that. And the number in July was well below the June's number. So we saw oil global prices for oil drop, basically because people were worried about China. And this is, I think, an indication that people in China are pessimistic about their own economy, which is the reason why they're not borrowing. They would borrow if they think they could make a buck later on. They don't think that they can with all sorts of bad numbers coming out of Beijing. And we certainly haven't talked about the worst of them.
Evergrande, Gordon, is that part of the puzzle that we've been watching develop? Because after the flap last year, will they let it fail? It, for all purposes, has failed, leading to, we're told, you only get anecdotes out of China, a mortgage strike, people refusing to pay on the mortgages of properties that either have been half-built or are unbuilt. Does that drive this failure of the Chinese economy?
It certainly does, John. Evergrande is a property developer, once was China's largest property developer. And last September, it made clear that it was not going to meet its obligations. And since then, a lot of other property developers have failed. In the previous answer, I referred to some of the worst numbers. The worst numbers come out of the property sector. So, for instance, we have seen both sales and prices fall something like 40% in the first half of this year compared to the comparable period in 2021. And these are numbers, basically, property developers don't think that they can make money, so they're not borrowing. Beijing's basic response to the problem has been to make money available. People just don't want it to do that. Now, they can force state enterprises to borrow and to build, but they can't force the private sector to do that. And there are a lot of constraints because there's just too much debt in China in the first place.
Politics, Gordon. This is remarkably the year in which Xi Jinping is demanding, shaping his future by asking for a third term as general secretary. What is remarkable about it is that the closer we get to that endorsement, there's no reason to believe at this time that there'll be a rival or a rejection. The weaker Xi Jinping's economy looks, the weaker his state looks, the more threatening it acts, which is, ironically, usually a sign of weakness. Is this failure of the economy, failure of the predation, is this because people are against him and are no longer sympathetic to him? Is it just bad timing? or what you say, heaven has turned against him, Gordon?
Yeah, I think heaven has turned against him. But in the nature of the Chinese political system, he probably will get his third term. Although the system is becoming less transparent, most everybody believes that at the 20th National Congress later this year, he will become dictator for life, as they say. This shows you that Xi Jinping is a master politician, but he is really bad at governing. And as we see from these disastrous numbers from the property sector, from these disappointing numbers for July, from all sorts of indications, his policies just have failed. And yet he is able to obtain this third term from all reports. And I think that's a real indication of the problems inside China, because as Xi Jinping gets more power, he gets accountability. He can't blame others for what's happening inside China. So he has to act more provocatively externally. And I think that China's more belligerent external approaches over the last year or so relate very closely with the problems at the core of the Chinese economy.
The number that jumped out at me from the reporting at Bloomberg was an estimated 20% of the young people are unemployed. That's the future, Gordon. And the generation, those cohorts, are not beholden to Xi Jinping. They're beholden to something called the Communist Party 20 or 30 years from now. Is this the first time we've seen this in this miracle that the young people are the ones who were turned out?
Yes. This is the first time we have seen such high figures for youth unemployment. You know, if you go back, decades, the number of unemployment didn't change month to month. It was really low, and they really didn't differentiate by age cohort. Now I think they have to, because it's evident that younger people are not getting jobs. Remember, China built this university system to sort of warehouse kids because there weren't jobs. Well, that's just a short-term solution, because after 4 years or after seven or whatever, these people are now hitting the market and there's just no jobs for them because the economy has lost its potential. And this is occurring as we're seeing some social phenomena that undercuts economic growth. The Communist Party is in a world of hurt. Yes, they can coerce people. They can sort of keep them from demonstrating most of the time. But they can't get Chinese kids to work, in part because they don't want to. Second of all, because they're just not the jobs for them. This is a situation where communism cannot coerce its way to a solution.
Final minute, Gordon. The Bloomberg has an article about Elon Musk writing a op-ed talking about working with China, working with technology in China, the future. And the op-ed comes to an the observations about the op-ed come to this: that Elon Musk is attempting to achieve something that right now looks impossible, to work with China in China and at the same time escape scrutiny by other friendly powers such as the United States and Europe. Do you think that right now the atmosphere between the two countries permits a development of any strong relationship, working relationship inside of China? We have 30 seconds, Gordon.
Absolutely not. Xi Jinping is making sure that foreign influences are being removed, and the foreign influence to be removed would be Elon Musk. So he's embarked on an impossible task.
Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.